Hello and welcome to You Matter. Hello and welcome to You Matter, which I said in that slightly quizzical way just now, because it's actually You Matter and Chewing It Over combined, which we're going to call Chew Matter. My guest today is Jack Chu, and we have a great conversation, really fun conversation. It's always fun chatting to Jack, but as it's the first podcast recording for both of us of 2024, we wanted to have a conversation that was a little bit of a reflection on 2023 and a little bit of a look forward to 2024. And I'm sure lots of you are in that sort of transition period yourselves. So I hope it's a conversation you'll find relevant and enjoyable, unless of course you're not listening to this until the height of a heat wave in July, in which case it'll be less relevant. But I hope you enjoy the conversation anyway. I'll be back at the end. So hello to what we've decided to call Chew Matter. Well, I decided to call it Chew Matter, and I've just told Jack and he's agreed, so that's good.
I'm glad you've clarified that. Most people would have definitely thought that sounds like what that arrogant prick would have called it if he'd have chosen. So you are admitting it wasn't me.
Yeah, no, it was my choice. Chew Matter, first episode of You Matter and Chewing It Over in 2024. Am I right, Jack? You haven't done a Chewing It Over already?
No.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be nice to invite Jack along today just to have a bit of a chat. The year has turned. We've all just done Christmas and New Year. And it's a funny old time. Everybody tends to approach those events in different ways. And I thought it was quite nice to start the year off with a chat with Jack, a bit about the year that's just gone and a bit about the year that's coming up. And thankfully he said yes. And thankfully he agreed to call it Chew Matter. So hi, Jack.
Yeah. Hi, Jo. I had a fun patient this morning where she said, hi, Jack. I said, hi, Jean. And we both realised that they were both words.
Nice. Was that the first time both of you had realised that in your lives of being called Jack and Jean?
Well, I just think we both had this momentary realisation. And we also had the same debate, which was that we did the whole Happy New Year thing. And it's like, before we get to, you know, frivolous topics, let's tackle the most important one. How long is it appropriate?
Right. I so get that. I said to Ian last night, my husband, I said, oh, do you get really fed up of having to start every email and text at this time of year? I hope you had a lovely Christmas and a happy new year. You don't really care what the answer is, but you just have to do it. Yeah, it's how long is too long?
Good Christmas, busy one, oh, a bit quiet, all right. Yes, it cliches, isn't it? But I think it's like you've got two options. You've got just this week, I think it's appropriate. But then you can't help if it's the first time you've seen someone. And that can extend, but if it extended beyond January, that'd be mental, wouldn't it?
I think
so. Yeah. Well, as you can imagine, I am very conscious of social etiquette always.
Yeah.
Like massive. Like go through. I struggle to know what to do with myself if I'm not prim and proper. So it's big issue for me. So I'm glad we've been able to do that on air.
For years, I've not been able to write Xmas. I have this little internal voice that won't let me write them.
Because it's sacrilegious. If you said Xmas, you'd feel blasphemous.
I don't think that's the reason. I'm quite happy to write.
My grandma hated Xmas for that reason, so I'm amused if it's the same.
Oh, maybe some person at some point in my life has said that. I'm quite happy to write HNY, Happy New Year.
And
all that kind of stuff. Xmas. But yeah, Xmas, no, can't do
it. Yeah, well, it's because Jesus is watching you. That's why. That's you just underestimated it. At least your subconscious was definitely... Yeah, and you say Xmas, right, Xmas, and you'd be like dabbing holy water on your forehead. Right, anyway, what were we going to talk about? I can't remember now.
This is it. We were just going to randomly chat. So, Jack, last year, how was 2023 for you? Big question.
Better than 2022. Progress in a number of ways. It was a bit tidier. There was some consolidation both at home and and at work. As you know, people might not know, but I moved house this time like December last year, and that was rushed. And do you remember that? We'd have ideally have done that a bit steadier, but just a few things that meant that we needed to get on with that, which meant that it was a bit chaotic and stuff. So yeah, it's settled down from there. and we've managed to. I feel like I've caught up with my tail a little bit, and that feels good. So it was nice, but it was still, I still feel like I'm torn between. I'm comfortable that we're still rebuilding and getting my bearings from COVID, both as a person and a business. But it coincides with so many different changes, both personally and professionally, from associated to COVID, as well as we're kids like December 19 and stuff, right? And so I'm now, on one hand, always looking on at everything through that lens, and because it feels still relevant for me. But then I'm also really conscious of like, how much are you just going to blame COVID? Like, how long are you going to just get over it, too? Like, I have this moment every now and again where I'm just like, I've got to stop. Like, is that an evergreen excuse for me for some stuff? Is it a really valid reference point? Is it something that just coincided with big changes in my life that I'm over associating? So I have got that admittedly knocking around. But if I reflect as you do this time of year, how was last year better than the year before? And this year will be better than it. And because there is still some tidying up to be done, especially psychologically for me. So that's kind of my ex classically excessively deep answer to that question, Joe. How was
Is
yours?
anything, I'll come to that in a minute, but I just want to ask you something that intrigued me.
That's fine. That's
So,
fine.
do you think there's anything in the fact that a lot of your big success and you really coming on the physio scene actually happened in COVID? And some might argue almost because of COVID, I'm thinking of the therapy live and cheering it over. You know, the things that enabled you to really become very visible in physio. Do you think COVID almost feels like, oh, that was then, can I do it in non-COVID times?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that, and I think that it's interesting to you frame it that way because I don't disagree. But I think that that is you're not alone in thinking and seeing it that way. But the data doesn't necessarily play that out. So I had to be much more commercially savvy. I had to literally do the innovations you're talking about were part of the keep the show on the road, keep the lights on completely. So there was a visibility and a personal leadership. I needed to really grow and lead on that stuff and be quite a focal point on that stuff. But actually, in terms of my impact and a lot of the other work that I'd done before that was no less at scale in many ways, right? So Physiomatters' existence up to that point set the scene for what I was then able to do. It wasn't from scratch. It's just that there are people, yourself included, who were much more aware of our stuff from then, which therefore I'm not countering, but it's just that I bet you can imagine, therefore, psychologically, that a doubt would answer that much because I had some success and influence and impact elsewhere prior to that gave rise to it. So it depends where you first engage with our stuff as to why it might feel that way. But I as much as I'd love to grab that reason by that you've almost given me there, it probably isn't because if anything, no, the most intimidating elements of it that I'm trying to catch up with myself on certainly came 2015, 16. You know, when we're doing the big R's and stuff like that was some of the most intimidating, complex, political, controversial stuff we were doing. And so weirdly, I probably couldn't use that excuse. I think it's just more of an overwhelmed thing. And I think at the heart of it, I can't blame COVID. I think I was in various ways completely underprepared for parenthood. So I think that on a deeper level, I think that's probably the biggest change. And so that was gets conflated a bit with that stuff, if I'm honest. So yeah, it's an interesting one, and I don't know, and I think it's hard for me to not to be authentic in answering that question. I can't help but still use that lens, and I think that that's funny because I've got to eventually. You've got to stop doing that. Everything can't be. It can't be how many years post COVID. Like it's like 2000 BC, right? AD. You know, I'm doing that all the time. Still, everything is still referenced from then, and I need to try and work through that, I think.
Yeah, you're right. And everything you hear, every anecdote you hear on the radio or the TV, people not even connected with healthcare, there's still this thing I've noticed I do where I go, oh, they said that happened in 2021. Was that pre-COVID? Were we in lockdown then? And it's the reference point for how you judge what they're describing. And it'll take us all a long time to get past that. Interesting you say about parenthood. My initial response is, has it ever been, find me the person in the history of the universe that was prepared for parenthood. But it answers a little bit about my year as well. So My 2023, a large part, certainly the first half of that, my kids did GCSEs and A levels last year. So there was a very much a parenting element to that. And I found myself deliberately resisting getting drawn into the how's it going? You know, how's it in the family? Is it really stressful? And loads of my friends locally were going through the same thing because a lot of your friends are the ones that you got to know when your kids are born, aren't they? It's a natural progression. And I think I've always had a resistance, or I tried to resist getting drawn into these conversations that whip up sort of uncomfortable feelings. And I'm sure it's a self-protection mechanism that, you know, I don't want to feel when the whole family is stressed for 6 months. I just can't cope with that. So I did a lot of, oh, no, it's fine. You know, they're doing a bit of revision and they're all a little bit worried about this one, but that one's okay. And then when it was all over, which wasn't really till 3/4 of the way through the year, it was end of August by the time you get the results. I was honest and went, oh my God, that was quite hard alongside running businesses and all the things you do in the rest of life. So I think a lot of my 2023 was, for my kids, it was dominated by them actually doing it. A large part of my year was dominated by trying to pretend it wasn't as stressful as actually it really was. And then quite a bit of relief, and they were both fine. And then I really did enjoy that last few months of the year, probably because that pressure was off. But I actually really like autumn. I quite like the dark. My daughter and I both talk about this a lot. We quite like the season going to the shorter days and the darkness, and you know, a lot of people just desperate for the solstice when it all turns, isn't it? But I quite like that kind of cozy into the year. And I did have a nice Christmas. I've been telling people this week that we had a big family Christmas and nobody fell out with anybody, which by anybody's Christmas, that's got to be a great result. So
It's
yeah, it was.
because you didn't invite me.
Yeah, that's right.
If you need to, you need it shaken up, then I'll turn
We'll
up
get you
Boxing
along
Day.
next year.
Yeah, no, that's great, and I'm glad to hear that. I think what's funny is that the age gap between your kids is relevant there as well, isn't it? Where I remember my parents, 'cause it's similar to mine. I think your two are at least similar sort of age gap between me and my sister, where at one point, especially because then my younger sister, there was a bigger gap as the third child, they then ended up, if it was by the time I'm having my GCSEs, they then had major exams for like 6 or 7 years or something, because basically because you had AS levels then. So it was like my GCSEs, then Alex is doing her GCSEs and I'm doing my S levels, then it just moves up. Not that I ever kept them. Once I'd gone to uni, they should have probably been more concerned about my education than they were, but it was certainly just in terms of the GCSE come A level time, then it just meant that things move up. So it can compact, can't it? Like it's intense enough for one, but when it's two, and especially because they'll have, as any humans would have, their unique challenges associated to it, of which you need to make sure it's not too generic, but then equally you want to make sure you're fair and even-handed as well. So I remember my parents, and much later than reflecting on that time as being intense. So yeah, I don't look forward to that.
You got a few years, good years ahead of
Hope
you.
so. Yeah,
Yeah,
they're
and
not at
actually,
school yet, so that would be especially neurotic for me to worry about that, wouldn't it? Before
yeah,
they're even at
don't start building
school.
that one up yet. Your friends will be in a right state if you start now. I've been thoughtful actually about You Matter and episodes this year, and being a parent and being a clinician is one of the things that might be quite interesting to talk about. I had a so so I've just done these sessions with Carly Gibson about being a clinician with neurodiversity and dyslexia in Carly's case. And actually, it was back in 2022, I talked to Martin, who quite rightly said, I don't want to be the physio with depression, but we talked about what it was like for him being a physio and having bouts of depression. And I thought actually one of my thoughts for You Matter this year is perhaps to talk a bit more about what is it like being a physio, and because we all are already clinician, and because we're so aware that our patients are not a sprained ankle, they are a sprained ankle and everything that goes on with that person. But I think sometimes clinician trumps everything else, some in my
Or at
head.
least it does when you interact with each other. I think because that's your shared identity, you can't help but center it And even though you know that you're a much more complex tapestry than usually clinical or professional work, your linkage to them means that that's kind of how you can't help but see them. And it might sometimes be the primary thing of which you know of them. And so I think that that's one of the things that I think would be great. I think you'd do some great, that would be a really nice angle for sure. And have you got a chance to listen to Chewy and Jim yet?
Not all of it.
Because part of it was inspired by your, well, you know, I basically asked Jim, I think it's in this one, where I just say like, about the fact that have we not been as upfront as we maybe could have been about neurodiversity of ourselves and each other in the ways in which then people constantly hook on and go, how do you or why do you do things like you do? But it would be interesting because not that you need to, I mean, you do need to, but I mean, in this instance, you don't need to for me to make this point, is that it was from off the back of yours and Carly's podcast moving us both to reflect on that, because it's not something we'd ever been conscious of hiding, but then we were similarly probably, it's not a clean line where personality disposition meets neurodiversity because of the nature of any given spectrum on any given particular issue, and something that therefore we felt a bit more obliged to lean into, and it was inspired by that work. So yeah, one for you and anyone else that hasn't watched
listen to that. I'd be really interested to hear your answer and Jim's actually.
Yeah, it was an interesting one, but great. And if you do anything more to that effect, it'll be brilliant. You know, you matters going from strength to strength, and really found, I mean, it's always had a good identity, but it really is finding it. It's such an important niche. I've told you before, and then I've pillaged your show for guests, haven't I? Like I'm a guest envy and stuff, because you guys touch on something that is so unique, and it has such obvious space. I think that sometimes I'm the nature of being such a generalist and chewing it over, it's just such breadth that means that then I just have you guys go into a space that is so obviously appropriately ring fenced. It's not super narrow, but it's just it's an obvious sort of agenda. And that is really nice. I want to try and see if I can learn when to zoom in a little tighter.
Yeah,
you know, because you know me as a person, I just can't parameterize a conversation, so it'll go where it needs to go, and that has some charm to it. And we should still do that because I like doing that. But then now and again, what if it's just like that's where I'm going to really sit on my hands, and it's not going to go over there, even if it could, like tangent free zone. And do some more focused work. And I think that's probably something that I'll learn from you, Mata, this year.
A coach friend of mine describes that as going vertical. So she says, in a conversation, you stay horizontal, and it's actually a good analogy for patients. You stay horizontal to make sure you cover all the territory. But you have to set your radar and be really aware of the point where going vertical is the right thing to do, and by, you know, go down that rabbit hole, because we've looked at all those things and gone, yes, this rabbit hole is important, so let's consciously go down it. And I try and remember that when I'm with coaching clients and with patients. But with You Matter as well, I have the luxury of it overtly is not addressing clinical questions directly, which is, I do say that's a luxury, because, you know, we all know we're dealing with the clinical world and all the issues that brings with it. And it's, I think it's actually nice for me, because I'm interested in the space outside the clinical stuff, but also maybe that's the appeal for other people, that, you know, you can just consciously park that for a moment and go, yeah, we know that clinical mushroom is absolutely massive. Let's talk around the outside of it a little bit.
And like you said about how sometimes that the understanding and recognition of each other's sort of complexities of their life or the different elements of their life. And I remember it's just rung a bell that I ended up having a conversation come argument with a physio who had been somewhat irritated by not just my work, but my style of online comms. It's many years ago now, at least 5 years ago. And this is in person, we're having this discussion, someone that I'd met much more online than I had in person, where she couldn't help but, as part of an argument come discussion, sort of reflect on the fact that, well, a reason it's come to mind is because this childlessness thing. I didn't have kids at that point, and she used that somewhat against me, in a sense of saying like, that part of this is that you wouldn't understand without having that plate to spin with regards to family. And I didn't for a second then want to, I wasn't in a defensive mood at all, but I was just saying that, well, no, of course not, but I've never professed to. I've never sort of implied that you or anyone should behave a certain way or do anything. It's not that I'm saying that you should be spinning all these plates. But then similarly, what you're using there, because I asked a few questions as to what you even mean by that, and she meant the sort of general challenges of which she's got more to balance than she was suggesting I did. And I said, and especially at that point of my life, I can't help but just think how much of an assumption you've made, though, there is. I don't have young children, but you've no idea as to the health of my parents or grandparents. You don't really know anything about me enough to make what you're assuming. You just can't help but look on and think, I couldn't do what you perceived that I was suggesting you should because of the time of which you've got other things. And therefore, you could only be saying that as someone that's childless. And it was just this failure of empathy, of which was being applied. Especially to someone that essentially was an avatar on the internet at that point. But it was bleeding into a discussion come argument in person, whereby far too much assumption was being made. And that, in their defense, there is no way that I haven't had my own version of a similar sort of thing. I don't think I was doing it then. I don't think I'd done it with them. But I was just meaning that, as a general rule, because there was this core identity that I was mentioning before, where we knew each other as clinicians, fellow MSK clinicians, that then the other stuff was just add on, rather than each of us considering that central to us, of which we've also got this professional thing, but to each other we had a different view. And that was a clumsiness I'll never really forget. And it's something that really sprung to mind when it was the intersection between, we're just talking about kids, we're talking about sort of the how we see each other, the complexity of identities, which come up on both our shows quite a lot, don't they, really? Because, you know, it's somewhat on vogue, but it's also, you know, what is it? Sense of self. It's pretty ubiquitous, isn't it?
Yeah, that argument didn't go well for Andrea Leadsom, did it? When she leveled it at Theresa May, same thing.
Yeah, I know.
Couldn't identify with the whole population, she shouldn't have kids.
What a massive loss that's been. Yeah, yeah. Where's she now? God, I don't want to dare check.
But you're right. I mean, parenting is one aspect, and yeah, that's the one I picked on, but if I do have that approach with You Matter, it needs to be balanced, and, you know, a variety of guests that do represent a spectrum, not just one particular common aspect. So Jack, 2024, we're allowed to talk about the mag now, aren't we, because it's out. First edition was out. Congratulations, it's out on the 1st of January. So I mean, that must have been a huge part of the end of your, I know it was a huge part of the end of your 2023, party to some of it. But yeah, tell me about that journey, the preparation, and now the release.
Funny and humble for you to suggest you a party to it. Of course, you were pretty pivotal and very involved, and will
he was
continue to be.
Crying down the phone every week,
whether you like it or not, you'll be. You know, you're very involved. But I think, it was. It was a massive part of the end of the year. Quite funny, as it got close towards the end of the year, people sort of starting to notice that I'd been and we'd been a bit quieter than usual, and I think most of them were enjoying the peace and quiet rather than sort of missing us. But we knew what we had. We got ahead on the project, so it was really cool. Obviously, we put that Love Actually thing up,
yeah,
and
that
sketch that leaked a bit about MSK Mag, and Jim had snuck in a small version of the logo even into that sketch and stuff that people had noticed. And yeah, it's like subtle little. It's just fun to be fun, and then on Christmas Eve to drop the cover. Was amazing, and the response better than we could have ever hoped, because we were meant to go like completely dark, then go live on the first with the cover. So we were going to maybe do the logo, but then by the because we were ahead, and it's like, why not, and we're excited, and people have been asking because of the Love Actually sketch, which had gone well, we put that out there. And so then to have started the year on the subscriber counts that we could have never have expected, and was never ahead of schedule. And so people saying, yeah, to actually get it out on time as a project is cool, but to actually then be almost ahead with it was really smart. So it feels a huge relief. You always want to try and make sure you don't end up lulling a little bit. You know, it was one of the things that was cool, because sometimes we do that. If you just sort of just limp over the line, you know, that unfortunately was the start line. You got limp over a start line. So but this was quite nice, is that we actually, deadline was 20th, whatever it was, 19th, wasn't it? And then to leak that on Christmas Eve. And so therefore, by the time it got to the first, we were rested up and started to, and so we were able to really get going this week. And it's just so exciting. I wish I should have thought to have it, but we've just sent some out. We got some print copies as well for promo, so there's one in the post to you, and they arrived yesterday. So there's just some really cool momentum around that. And I just, as I said in my editorial for it, which I read on the Physio Matters podcast feed yesterday, it's just, I do think that it will be an opportunity for us to all have some content in common again. And I think that the fracturing and the tribalism that is occurring, it's always occurring across all different spheres and stuff. But if we are going to try and unify around sort of rehab-centric MSK practice and really advance our style of care, we know that part of that is to better empathize, as we've just described. So having things in common, starting to share professional experiences, business practices, competence, as well as clinical content, and just having that shared identity that maybe could convalesce around a product. And obviously, we're not going to pretend that, of course, I'd rather it be this and be mine, because I think it's a good idea, but also because I think that its commercial success would be good for the industry, because I know that we will keep any advertisement well. I know that we will look after the community well, and we've many a shared project that this would help fund. And so, I massive bias, of course, but that's one of the things that most excites me. I cannot ever just count the beans or count the numbers, because I just look on and see, I know what that could unlock. I know what things we're keeping down because we can't either afford the time or money to do that would enhance everything else if it works. And so that's one of the things that's always forever exciting for me. So yeah, thanks for your involvement so far. It's only just getting started. I've just signed off the Feb pieces and commissioned the March pieces and stuff. It's so cool. So there's some really good stuff planned. How did it feel contributing to it? Because it's a weird one when you invite someone, like when you were invited first to tune it over to Therapy Live, to anything that we've ever done together, and they've existed. They've been things that you could look at other episodes for and stuff. So this was the first time we'd approach you on a promise. It's like 10 years ago when I approached Lee Herrington about a podcast. But what the hell's a podcast? We'd heard about, and so he had to give up his time on a whim, really.
Yeah. No, good question. And I mean, firstly, you wrote a very detailed document for, if anyone is listening and thinking of that they'd like to contribute in the future. Jack's put together a really comprehensive document that details not just, use this font and this number of words and stuff. There's a lot of detail about the style. And for me personally, that bit was reassuring, because that's how I like to write anyway. If you'd said to me, Joe, write an academic paper with 50 references and don't spell anything wrong and don't put any opinions in there, that would have been much more daunting. So I suppose to an extent it fed into the way I would like to communicate. But I think an unusual thing about you and Jim is that you're able to tread this line beautifully of being quite natural and human and, always bringing humour into things and always bringing yourselves into things. But, everybody listening, these guys put so much detail in the background, and things are not left to chance, and the fun is never far away. But I think you're actually both really, really good at really making sure that something is produced with a real quality. You don't leave stuff to chance, but you are happy to let things run naturally. And I think that's actually a really hard line to tread, and I think you both do it brilliantly.
That's really kind and really reassuring, because I think that's one of the things. And I think it even says in the writer's guide that the done badly, we give too much parameters that people's freedom can't express.
Yeah.
But then similarly too far the other way, in that people feel unmoored and therefore the contributors are going to feel at a loss, especially if then this heavy editing that then comes down the pike. You'd rather do it front end than back end.
Yeah.
How did that feel? How did it feel when my red pen went across it? But
absolutely fine. I mean, I don't know, maybe you're asking the wrong person, because I don't particularly get upset about things like that, and I don't particularly worry about putting myself out there either. Perhaps if somebody was a little more nervous, you gave me feedback. Actually, it was really helpful, because you helped me expand on some ideas, and I think you picked out some thoughts that I was having, but I probably, when you know what you're saying, so you paraphrase too much, and then some of the stuff that you did actually made me explain a bit more what I was trying to say. So now I found it all fun.
You were all
But
brilliant for that, though. That's the thing, is that I think that there's no moment that I've celebrated more, including the launch, the release, the cover, creating, receiving the print copy as I did yesterday, and all of these were little merry jig moments. But the biggest one, I think Sean noticed it in me. What's just what are you grinning at? And I was like, they've all just taken, like, less so with yours. I can't remember because I wasn't ruthless with any of it. But wording, being direct, and editing people's work, of which are voluntarily contributing to a new piece, of which is not proven. There were some quite pointed points, including to, you guys, actual experts in this stuff, right? Rather than little old me, generalist. So the response to that, and the way in which you all then my elevated your pieces based on that feedback, that's the biggest merry jig, big grin moment for me, like, above all else. And it was like, I remember it being like, what are you beaming for? Yeah, Charlotte really noticed it in me. I was just like, because that was the biggest relief, is that if we can get the writer's guide right, give the creative people the parameters to thrive, but then also be able to contribute post-hoc appropriately in ways that doesn't make them see their arse or feel over scrutinized, doesn't feel like you're bringing their piece down at all, but you give suggestions that then elevates it in keeping with what we're all after, and they in each case thank me for it. I was just like, right, okay, I'm if it can get this won't continue forever and a day. I'm going to make mistakes in this direction, but for the first issue, for it to not, for it to not be the case at all with all the guest writers was unbelievable feeling.
Well, I
So
know one of the
yeah.
biggest things you've always had, and actually I've more recently heard Nicola Graham articulate the same thing, is just this real wish to get to a place in physio and wider healthcare where we can disagree and we can correct each other and we can elevate each other without getting offended. And you and I spoke at length when we first met, and my take on it was a little bit more, I want us to be able to be honest with each other and more vulnerable with each other, but it's two sides of the same coin, really, isn't it? And if the mag, I actually was going to ask you at the start, what is it about this platform with the mag that you think is going to bring us together as opposed to ways that we've sort of polarized in the past? But I think you've just explained it a little bit. It's a platform for people to come and be quite honest about how they feel and also be challenged and corrected and ideas developed. And I
Yeah,
don't know
I
why
think
in there particularly, but
I want better argue. Yeah, I want better, but I think the written form could really be a resurgent way in which there will need a resurgence in professional debate, but without it being so short form like social media is, that it could get so
yeah.
snarky, because you're just not going to have the capacity to do that, or you've taken the pace off it by design. Even if you were to respond, imagine someone wrote a response piece to yours a month later. It's going to soften it. So even if it was trying to be quite sharp and pointed, it just can't be at the pace, because the pace is so fast now that this takes it off. So I think that that's one of it. One thing, I tell you what though, MSK Mag was meant to be the freshest, most exciting thing in our space, and then you and Joe Elphiston announced your retreat, right? So that is
Nice
cruel. If
segue
anything,
there,
if ever we were going to fall out, that was the ultimate thundersteal. So tell us a bit about that, because that looks absolutely class.
Yeah, well, Joanne and I got on a call and we're like, God, Jack and Jim are doing something big. What can we possibly do to steal their thunder? That is not true at all. So anybody that's listened to my You Matter episode with Joanne last year will know that it was just an
You just
unashamed
fell in
loving.
love. You did, absolutely. Like, so yeah, I love that you've started from there. Is that, well, I met this lady who I fell in love with a few on air a few
Yeah,
months ago. Yeah, but
it's
that is
quite
exactly what
public.
I would have said. Yeah.
And so we came off the back of that and just went, well, we've got to do something together. And that both quite busy and just left that for a while. And when did we pick it up? We crossed paths again for some reason. I can't remember this part of the story. Anyway, we started talking about, no, yeah, get it right, Joe. It's funny. I've just come off a coaching call with someone talking about presenting and content in a teaching session. Somebody's quite nervous about it, and I was laughing about this meme that I'd seen of this woman talking to another lady, going, "Right, have you written your talk yet?" And the woman goes, "No, but I've decided what I'm wearing." And I was like, "Yeah, I can still identify with that, the outfit first." And so Joanne and I met for coffee, and we started talking about venues. And we were talking about how we get a bit frustrated when you hear about these really great events and then you turn up in some really boring corporate hotel and you feel a bit shortchanged. And so we say, "Oh, I prefer to be in places that actually have some heart and speak to you. And if we were going to do something, we'd want to make sure it was this kind of venue." And then we started talking a little bit about what we might do, but then it came about that Ian, my husband, had discovered through his tree work randomly this place called Hawkwood College in Stroud. And it's an old sort of arts and crafts manor house, and it's got a whole story behind it with the people that bought it. And for various reasons, it's become this real centre for challenging conversation, if you like, bringing groups together that want to try and move things forward and shift things. And it happens to be in the beautiful Stroud Valleys. I don't know if you know Stroud, but Stroud's got a reputation. Stroud is actually people say, "Oh, it's a bit Stroudy." And it means sometimes it's a little bit bohemian, a little bit out there, but it's also a kind of, a little bit different. And so
Cool.
I visited, and then I just messaged Joanne and said, "Right, I found the venue, we've got to do something." She came along, and then while we were there, we started talking about what we wanted to sort of address around this idea of clinical masks. And initially we were talking about how clinical masks might be just a negative thing, but then we started thinking about the more positive aspects of masks and actually looking at some pictures of really amazing masks and going, "Well, actually, it's not all negative, and there's always a mask, just like there's always judgment." And then this idea of this mini retreat where people we can help people look at the masks they may have worn in the past clinically, why they might have put them on, how that served them at the time, and then move it on through the course of the retreat. So how's your life changed? What's changed? Do you still need that mask? Do you need something else? Do you need something new? And we realized that wasn't going to be just a morning workshop. That was something where we'd need to be together and have deeper discussions. And I'm sure other topics will get brought in around the idea of masks, but it was a very overused word, organic. But the whole process, we've been laughing about, "Oh, it just feels like we're playing with this and we're following where it's taking us." And I guess that's the nature of how we want the retreat to be as well.
No, that's cool. Yeah, really emergent, isn't it? It's just these problems amongst us, and when you find someone of which you agree, especially in the main on analysis, and then the suggested solutions to it feel like they converge, then that's a perfect recipe for collaboration, isn't it? So yeah, no, I'm so excited to see how that develops, and such a lovely blossoming relationship. Two of my favorite Joes, and there are many. There are many. I did a LinkedIn post last year, didn't I, about that, noticing that you two were many at what, two of like 20 Joes in this network that are brilliant. So yeah, it's really interesting to see. I've not heard that about it being a bit stroudy, but that sounds pretty good. I don't think I'm maybe just not cool enough, am I?
Well,
But
I'm not sure if you have to be cool to
not
do
hip and
it.
not hippie and hip or hippie enough. But yeah, no, that's brilliant. So when is it?
It is April the 25th to the 27th. And yeah, we've only got a few places left actually. So if people are interested, then we'll stick out a few more posts and adverts, but do get in touch if
Yeah.
anyone's listened to this and think they would like to be involved.
It's funny because I often think, especially at the moment with the mag and stuff, I think in terms of content. And I just think it's such a funny thing for me to look on at that, hear about it, inevitably know what sort of things will be elicited that are going to be very developing for people personally, but also just the nature of you two as people, as well as the delegates you'll attract. Just I know the energy that that would harness that could then really change things forward. So then I've got to resist the instinct to go and book the place and broadcast it and stream it. Do you know what I mean? Because it's of course not that, but it's just that it's still exciting, even though I know that of course we're not going to cast it and that's not what it's for. Just what could the art of the possible, what could happen, what could emerge, what relationships and collaborations could emerge from that, what future retreats, what in the spirit of a think tank, in a sense, as to what would
Yeah, no,
develop from
you're following
again
my.
emergently.
You're not stealing anything. You're following my train of thought exactly. That, just being that place. You and I have talked a lot about, just can we just get people in the same place, because we're all having these amazing conversations all around the country and all around the world and saying so many of the same things. And yeah, I agree. It's you can't solve everything in one place, but I don't know. There's something about certain locations and. And not even say certain people, because actually I think it is sometimes just bringing people together to a place that inspires in some way can be really, really just interesting. And yeah, my mind had already gone there. Yeah, where is this gonna go
What might
next?
emerge? Well, you don't. But that's the thing, is that the ultimate contrast in any conversation or moment, as well as then when you look on at something like that, that's exciting to happen, is that you've always got to just trade off sensibly about what might be, without overindulging that in such a way that you miss the moment. Like, it's the classic sort of registering, making sure you take a photograph for posterity, or take a video for making sure it's then got legs, without compromising your experience in the moment. That's not an easy trade. I personally don't find that an easy trade-off,
I
because I
said
think
to
there's been
Ian.
times where I've been like, oh yeah, immediate, it's been so trendy that the pictures of, there's a really famous picture of everyone with their phones out and an old lady being present in the moment as a procession goes by. I can't remember what it is, right?
Yeah.
And it's lovely, and it's a great point about, that we're hiding behind our phones, etc. I've then made the mistake at times of going too far that way. It's been like just being hyper present. But I did want a photograph of that moment, the right amount of those things, especially with regards back to the kids again and stuff. It's like, and you know this more than most, is that I've needed to be more in the room. But then I've seen only a bit, but seen a bit where I'm too in the room, and there's no moments of which I can reflect and remember that moment. So I'm sure I have probably better memories than me, and it doesn't matter. But sometimes I do want to try and register that, and that others would benefit greatly if I'd have taken that, rather than me explaining something that happened. I could have easily captured it, and why didn't I? And that's such an interesting one. And I think that when I'm reflecting on your retreat, it's going to be really exciting to see if you can get that balance of it being truly immersive, but also having this little PS, this little afterword, this little what might come next, what might
Yes,
emerge even
and
from
what
that,
now?
which is quite cool.
I said to Ian, we were walking a couple of days ago and we were talking about New Year, and inevitably the resolutions conversation comes up, and I said to him, actually, I really feel like I want to glide with this year. And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, I'm such a driver. Like I drive things all the time, and sometimes I push too hard. I get an idea and it's got to be done now, or it's or I've got to do something. And I was reflecting a bit on this experience with Joanne, but other things as well have just gone quite well recently, where I just feel like I'm riding it rather than driving it, and I like that feeling. Actually, one big transition for me, which I've talked about a lot on MeHub and You Matter, is I turned 50 at the end of last year, and I've felt so much more, excuse me, been so much more aware of that transition than I was to being 40. No, it's quite unexpected, actually. I've not been prepared for quite a change in my thought processes, and one of those changes does seem to be this. Like, I'm tired of driving, and I'm not certainly not tired of life, no way. But I tired of starting everything and feeling like I need to be the energy behind everything. And that's definitely quite a new feeling, quite a nice feeling. And
Gliding's a nice phrase for it, because people sometimes, when you're driving versus coasting, like when you put your clutch down and you're coasting to a roundabout, where that famously out of control. Whereas gliding has used the initial energy and then is still in full control, and it's not really behaving any differently to what another craft would be. So I like that analogy, and I can see that working. Some of that has just emerged. I read a really interesting book. When I say I read a book, is that of course I read bits of it and then had the audiobook. But I still just say I read, and I didn't. I read a couple of op-eds, then I listened to a couple of podcasts, and then I read the audio, got the audiobook, and read maybe two chapters. But anyway, there's this, and I can't remember the actual title of the book, but the sort of, I think it's the subline is, from maiden to mother to matriarch, and it's talking about the life course of the sociological life course of women.
It's not Haggitude, is it? Because that's the book I just read.
It's what? Sorry?
Is the book called Haggitude?
No. I didn't know what noise you just made then. That wasn't a word.
Haggitude, being a hag.
You just sneezed or something. Right? Haggitude. No, I haven't. Maiden to mother to matriarch. And so what she would say you're describing to some extent is this interesting transition, which always is into play. And but it's just that not that you ever suddenly stop needing to be a mother, but it's more that then there is a life transition as to your kids are soon to be flying the nest and they're in that transitionary phase of adulthood themselves, is that then it's just what is your then role as a matriarch, and probably your direct initiative and impetus is going to be less required. And if your identity was just tied up in that, if you were the life soul, the driving force of which you are, you're obviously a force of nature, but it isn't all of you, and you have got these other energies. And so then to be a matriarch is to then look what you've grown both professionally and personally that then can be that driving force. So I don't know if I'm giving a good blurb to this book, but I think you'd like it. And it's certainly something that I obviously can't give any really direct empathy to that life course, because you're obviously 7 times older than me, but I obviously can, having at least read that recently, I can sort of recognize what you're on about, and something that you probably don't notice when a transition like that is upon you until it's upon you. You wouldn't have seen it coming, would you?
No, and I'd go back to my 40-year-old self, or anybody nearer 35, 40 listening now, and say, yeah, don't worry, it's actually really cool. I'd have thought then, oh gosh, that I'm going to watch out for that, because that'll be the time when I start to feel a bit sad because I'm losing some of my energy and the kids are flying the nest and stuff. Don't get me wrong, I will miss my kids hugely, but feel really positive about it and genuinely, not just doing the lip service of these days we're all supposed to be positive about being on it. Genuinely feels really good.
No, fair, but I'll give you credit for that. It's funny because if you remember back to our very, very early conversations, including on air, where I was like, some of the people in sort of the sort of coaching, counseling type space and stuff, I was like, it's like pop positive psychology and stuff, toxic positivity type stuff. And you know, it's just funny you even saying that, is I don't want to say this because I'd expect to. It's like, you won't need to worry about that anymore, Joe. Even I've stopped trying to make sure that you mitigate that. You know, it used to be like every couple of conversations, just unnecessarily, I'd just be like, oh, but we don't want to get carried away though, do we? No one gets who's getting carried away. Like, eventually, you didn't. You should have just snapped and just be like, who's getting carried away? What are you on about? How long? But I have stopped saying that. I hope you've noticed that. I've stopped saying
you've
that.
You've chilled
now.
About that.
Yeah, but you do. But I think that's because you've proven it. Right? That's one of the things that's cool. Is that I stand by why I was concerned, not about you, but just my sort of allergy to where that goes too far, and it just ruins good not just good content, but good people get carried away on that theme. And so the fact that you haven't is great, but also just that to watch the fruits of that labor and the accuracy of which you've delivered a message without getting carried away on a theme, or to be reflective and to walk things back, or to just go on a really authentic journey, means that then what you will go on to produce in 2024 and beyond, and what you've produced in MSK Mag, as an example, again, and what we're going to be able to do. Shall we admit to what's your next piece? We should admit that, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Shall we tell them what's coming next? What's your superhero name for MSK Mag then?
I'm going to be Antiversion. the MSK Mag's Agony Aunt. Should have practiced that before I said it. Yes, and I'll admit that Jack made that brilliant name up, Antiversion.
I love that. We've got, we said about with the Chewy and Jim podcast and stuff, you start with a funny pun name and then retrofit a feature. I can't think that was the case. We're like, we should have an Agony Aunt, and that would be actually really interesting. It'd be a bit of fun, but also it'd be really valuable content. I think that people do need that and want that. There is something to be said for a bit of a need for a cry for help in a few different domains. But what would our Agony Aunt be? And so Antiversion, Yeah, it spoiled the meeting because we just chuckled then for the rest of it. And also that I've told you, haven't I, about our features writer, Glenn O'Humeral,
Yes, that's brilliant.
which is going to be a really ranty pseudonym piece. That's going to be anything that's too spicy that anyone wants to put their name to. It's going to be like really
Oh,
edgy.
really?
So yeah, not just humoral silly stuff. It's going to be actually like, yeah, that's where, you know, like gossip columns and stuff on New Statesman and Steerpipe for the Spectator. They're
Yeah.
pseudonym, famous pseudonyms that are multiple different people underneath them, but just don't want to put their name to what they're
It'll be really
saying.
fun trying to guess who the people are that contribute
Yeah,
to
no, I
that.
think that people will just continue to, because you're the other pseudonym, supposedly, like, then people will probably just think it's Joe. You've got this like alter ego.
Yeah.
She's
Oh, actually,
pleasant
that'd
on
be
the
good.
Agony Ant columns. Anti-version's really nice, but then the Jekyll to the Hyde, or whichever way it round is, he's like Joe then rants as Glen O'Humeral. That would be quite fun. But yeah, I'm so excited for that. And I think that that would be another, I suppose, do you agree with what I've just said there, that there is a kind of, as much as we're having fun with it, there is a bit of a serious need for an MSK Agony Ant in a few different domains?
Yeah, and I think you've looked at some of the questions that have come up because of the first version of that's coming out in the second edition, isn't it? And yeah, it absolutely. Yeah, I do think there's a need, and I hope I'll be up to the job of addressing it in a way that does enough, because it's a really, it's a short. The agony answer is a short thing, and there's only so much you can say, and I can see it's going to be quite challenging for me to be able to understand the problem in the short form that it's presented to me, present a reasonable stab at the answer, and where necessary, signpost on. I think it can only often be an introduction to an answer, and I actually beat myself up when I started playing with it. I was thinking, oh, this is not co-training because I'm giving answers, I'm giving opinions. But I think to be really overt about that and say, this is, like I said in the intro, this is my best guess, and I hope that will be helpful. But I think, yeah, having a place to anonymously present the things that, if they're bugging you, they will be bugging somebody else, however, weird or obscure or personal you think they are. So I think it'll be a really useful part of the mag. And yeah. The whole mag is, so far it looks like it's going to be a lovely mixture of really quite serious content, but presented in a way that can be absorbed and digested, and it won't be scary to challenge it and ask questions about it, which is brilliant.
No, that's good. I mean, we want to take the content seriously, or the subject matter seriously, but not ourselves, is what
That's
we're
a
trying to
great
make sure
way
we
of
do.
phrasing it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's like, because it is, there's some really important and great work we can do. But there's also a recipe for collective burnout is for us to just then think that the pain and suffering and even sort of death and depression that can exist in and around our space. We're in healthcare in a
Yeah.
difficult sociological time with wars ravaging, right? It's shit serious. Of course it is. And equally, that done badly, levity. You guys, you matter. You matter. You covered brilliantly, like gallows humor and sort of the interesting intersection there, which is it was really, really tastefully done. And I think that then, if we were clumsy with it, and it was just littered with puns and silliness or banter, then that would be really, really not capturing the moment. But then similarly, it doesn't need to be dour. And I think that, to be honest, one of the reasons that we decided to do MSK Mag is because we, especially in our early days of Physio Matters, and I think just generally, we are very nerdy for the evidence, right? And so then evidence is not a synonym for data, for research. Evidence can come in all sorts of different ways, and the opinion and the way in which that can come doesn't need to be just in an interesting op-ed at the front of a journal of which you didn't read because you didn't want to read the data. So op-eds and opinion pieces that can exist on their own and stand on their own and be referencing material and then to be challenged, it's like just allowing ourselves to be a bit more casual with that. I think we've all been trying to prove ourselves as individuals and as professionals to then just need to speak an academic language that I don't think is necessarily well suited to many of us. And those that one of the things that's brilliant about this first issue is that someone who is, very academically literate and very capable, PhD, of course, someone like Derek Griffin, writing such a great piece that really warms to a subject matter and reflects on his own oohs and ahs. But then there's nothing anti-intellectual about both him as a writer, of course, him as a thinker, and then the piece itself. So I think that needle can be threaded and threaded's not a word, is it? Threaded?
Thread? Sorry,
thread. Needle being thread. And I hope so. And I think it's made me realise as well, which is why it's cool to do this today, is that it's like, I can't think of a better set of opportunities for the ever closer union of our project, our shared project in the macro, but also like, it's just so obviously a perfect marriage, perfect family type thing, isn't it? Where there's just, it's more compatible than I could have ever known. We always knew it was, we never felt like a strange mix, but now it's just like, yeah, the goals have always been shared, but now it just feels like that, you know, that content, it's like that's a space of which you obviously feel, but it overlaps more than it's offering any distinction. And then similarly, you've always been brave enough to not hide from the clinical. Like, that's what so many of your contemporaries will do, is just imply that there's no relevance to clinical changes. Mm-hmm. Whereas in your piece in the mag, sorry, I keep touting it, but in your piece in the mag, you're accepting that one of the variables that are making people conscious of that is affecting their internal mental health and risk of burnout is the fact that there is paradigm shifts left, right and center, which would upend anyone. So, you know, I doubt accountants are having to face that down every 5 minutes, whereas in MSK therapies, you know, can you believe how different our practice is from 10 years? There's no firm ground. So if you were to, like many do, you know, I'm in this sort of coaching psych help space, I'm going to hide from the clinical realities of MSK practice changing and weren't in touch with your finger on the pulse of that and caring about that, then yeah, you would be far less both of an agony aunt as well as obviously a coach. So it's just really cool for me to look on and think, right, all of the journey we're all on, it does feel, because it could easily go the other way, couldn't it? It wouldn't be acrimonious, wouldn't it? It's just like, it just feels like we're in different places. Now, Joe's doing this sort of retreat over here, it doesn't feel like it's, and we're starting a journal, you know, we went really hyper academic for some reason, be strange, but we could have done or what have you, then maybe that could have been, but instead it just feels like it's such a really interesting both parallel and converging track, which, yeah, it's exciting to see what we do both independently and together this year.
The tangled web now, I think.
That's true. That'd be difficult to unpick, wouldn't it? For sure. But yeah, thanks for all you do. And I'm glad we're able to get this together on the hectic first week back. It's always mad, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I hope it goes well. And circling back to the start conversation, I'm going to do one more day of asking people if they had a nice Christmas and wishing them a happy new year, and then I'm done. So apologies if I talk to you after tomorrow, you're not getting that question.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to try to not finish on a massively slow, projected and profound point, but Happy New Year, Joe.
Thank you, Jack. Happy Xmas.
Oh, yeah, nice one. You ruined it.
Hyperventilating now.
I'm doing my Hail Marys now.
See you, Jack.
See you later.
That was another fun conversation with my mate, Jack. I hope it was fun for you too. I hope it was helpful to get a little bit more information about the brilliant MSK mag that Physiomatters have just released. If you haven't seen the first edition yet, then get yourself an online copy, or even get an actual physical copy if you subscribe, if you're one of the first, I don't know, first 50 that subscribe. So get onto that if you haven't already. And it was great, very kind of Jack to ask me about the upcoming retreat that I'm doing in April with Joanne Elphinstone. To think about some of the things that I would like to talk about on You Matter, but actually I would also love to know what you would like me to be talking about on You Matter this year, what guests you'd like me to invite on, and what conversations you think need to be had in healthcare and between clinicians. You can get hold of Jack through lots and lots of channels. He's Jack Chu on LinkedIn and on X. But if you look at anything under Physiomatters, then you'll find lots of his stuff very easily. And of course, you can get hold of me either Joe Turner on LinkedIn, mehab_Joe on X, or you can just go to the Mehab website, which is mehab.co.uk. So, whatever your reflections are of the end of 2023 and whatever you are looking forward to in 2024, I hope that it's a nice, gentle, gliding start for you in 2024. Let's all do a bit of gliding together. Take care. Oh, almost forgot. If you are a clinician just heading out into this new year, thinking about all the things that you might be able to do in your work, your businesses, your families, your communities, do take some time. Self-care is an absolutely imperative part of that process. You can't do any of those things unless you are looking after yourself. Do remember that you matter.